Well, welcome back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And Kevin, the 2023 regular season is over here tonight, and man, what a season it's been for sure.
No doubt about it. It's 100 games, and, you know, at times it seems like the season drags on, but, you know, as I wrote it in the blog today, it just seemed like it was yesterday. I was sitting in a hotel room or a hotel bar with Brett Allred and Tanner Hoops waiting for the season to begin, and now, wow, 100 games in however many days, and we're at the end of the season and ready to see how another exciting postseason unfolds.
Hey, you know, Kevin, it's been so interesting to me this year because, you know, since 2014, when I first jumped here into the league, I came into the season really having, I think, a pretty solid idea of how the standings would work out, who was going to be in what position. There was always that, you know, one or two teams that came as an upstart, but boy, this year, I'm stunned at how these division races work. I mean, I didn't have anybody, I think, in the spot that I expected them to be in this year. And I think that's a real testament to how unbelievably talented this league is, and just fun baseball every night. It's a league where the unexpected teams that you just don't think are going to win or should win or whatever still wind up getting victories. And I think that's what makes baseball great and what makes this league really fantastic is the unexpected. And we got to see a lot of that this year.
We did. And, you know, I'm kind of doing the math in my head right now, but when after all is said and done, six out of the eight teams from last year's playoffs are also back this year, the only exceptions being Sioux City and Sioux Falls replacing Winnipeg and Lincoln.
One thing I really liked, Kevin, was nobody won 60 games this year. Nobody lost 60 games this season. And I think that says a lot about how close the talent level here is. You had a big-time managerial change at the starting of the year. We had some new managers, even an old manager coming to be in a new situation this year. And it really was just a lot of unexpected, a lot of fun that we saw. And two stories I just want to kind of talk about first here, Kevin, before we really dive into the league are Max Murphy and John Silviano. We saw both of those guys go down with pretty serious leg injuries last year in the playoffs. Both came back, John coming back here in the last few days again after sitting out for much of the year. Max Murphy was battling for the home run crown after just a brutal leg break in last year's playoffs. It's exciting to see those veteran guys that we have come to know and watch really come back and have great seasons after such a tragic injuries last year.
And what the amazing thing with Max Murphy is that I was looking this up as I was pulling a postseason all-star team out of my rear last night, late at night, is that Murphy put up those RBI and home run numbers comparable to last year's, but there was not another Goldeye with more than that hit double digits for home runs. So he was doing all that with not really a ton of protection in the lineup. You have to wonder, even though the Goldeyes finished last, could Murphy get another Player of the Year honor?
Absolutely. I mean, it was well-deserving. And if his team would have won a few more games, I think he does do that, Kevin. And my second story that really kind of jumped out at me this season is the veteran guys, the guys that, you know, in their 30s, still putting up impressive numbers. None bigger than Kevin McGovern, who winds up coming away with the top ERA in the league on a staff that was really struggling this year. And keep in mind, you know, he's a guy who has to do the pitching duties as well for the team as their pitching coach and, you know, monitor what's going on with everybody else. But you got to like when your pitching coach winds up leading the league in the ERA. It's really setting the standard, I would think.
Yeah, and I may take a little heat for picking him as pitcher of the year, but I just felt, even though he didn't lead the league in wins, I think Gregory Vasquez may have had a better ERA than McGovern. I could be wrong on that. But
they finished second.
McGovern
wound up winning the ERA.
Okay, McGovern put up those kind of numbers, and like you had said, while also trying to navigate a pitching staff through a great deal of turnover. And I imagine, I mean, that's got to be tough to, not only are you trying to get ready for your own start, but you're also trying to guide guys and guys that are inexperienced. You're trying to guide them and get them to be successful to obviously help the ball club. Tyler Grauer's numbers were down a bit from his season last year. So, you know, the last game I saw McGovern pitch, it was not a good night for him. It was in Sioux City. Sioux City did hit him around pretty early. But McGovern, I believe, still managed to give them five or six innings because he just knew that even though he didn't have his stuff that night. And it was a hot night in Sioux City, so it was tough for any pitcher to get too deep into the ball game. But he knew that he had to save his bullpen. And, I mean, to me, that just tells you a lot about the leadership quality of a pitcher when he knows he doesn't have his best stuff, but he's going to go out there, he's going to grind, and he's going to do what he needs to do for the betterment of the team in the long run.
Absolutely. And Kevin has always been a guy that went above and beyond in anything you ever needed from him. And just a class act from start to finish, for sure. Well, Kevin and I are not going to dive into each team this week because it's playoff time. And after the playoffs finally get over, we're going to do the same thing we've done the last few years and go through each of the teams one by one each week to get a focus on that and talk about it. It's the playoff time, and that's really the big deal. So before we dive in specifically into playoffs, Kevin, let's talk about player and pitcher of the month. Were named a few days ago. Colton Davis from the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks named as the pitcher of the month. Guy finished the season 7-0, 4-0 in August, 1.74 ERA, was absolutely ridiculous. For a team that had Kevin McGovern and some disappointing performances for most of the other team, Colton Davis really became a surprise superstar for this club.
No doubt, and I believe I saw him pitch in also in Sioux City in early August, and he did okay, but boy, after that, he just went on a tear and had an incredible month. And I could probably argue the combination of McGovern and Davis propelled the Redhawks into a playoff spot.
In the player of the month for August, Kevin, Mike Hart from the Sioux Falls Canaries. It's a great story for us. Again, for those of us who have been around American Association Baseball for a long time, Mike Hart has been one of those guys who was a hard-nosed, go-into-the-wall kind of guy. He had a decent bat, but never was putting up huge offensive numbers in his first few seasons with the league. But, boy, he has caught fire. Last year in Schaumburg, had a big home run year. This season set a personal high in terms of homers. He hits 11 in August with a .319 batting average and 24 RBI. Mike Hart, man, just a heart and soul, not intended to be a pun, but heart and soul to Sioux Falls Canaries Club, and really is a great representative of what this team is all about.
And something must have really clicked for him last year in Schaumburg, because that's when he put up the huge home run totals like you're talking about, and he brought that back to Sioux Falls. And I believe a guy like Mike Hart, you know, guys like Darnell Sweeney, Jabari Henry, those guys were vital to that team, not just because of what they could do offensively, but because of the leadership and the fire that they provide for the ball club. And, you know, it's become a redundant theme tonight, but I think that Mike Hart was one of the guys that propelled the Canaries into the playoffs.
Player and pitcher of the week, Kevin, finals of the regular season for week 17 here. Wind up going here today with Ryan Zimmerman for the pitcher of the week. Ryan had most phenomenal year, I think, of his career. Went in 10 games, 3.36 ERA, which was second in the American Association, but had an incredible week. 7 shutout innings and a victory early on. He just got a one-inning kind of warm-up for the playoffs yesterday. So no run innings for him this week. Great to see that, because we like Ryan, and great to hear just what an instrumental part he's been for Milwaukee, especially heading into their championship aspirations.
You know, Zim's been at it for quite a few years now, and I was glad that the way this week laid out with the big game he had early in the week, it was justified that he got the Pitcher of the Week honors, and I felt like it was greatly deserved. And it also ties in to him breaking a couple Milkman records with most career victories and most strikeouts from any Milkman pitcher. So, you know, quite a week for Zimmerman with getting honors from us and breaking 2 Milkman records.
The Player of the Week, Brett Boswell, as our good buddy Brad Allred is very high on Brett so far this season. Solid batting average for the week there, 364, but 4 homers to lead the American Association, 2nd in RBI with 10. Man, just phenomenal pickup for this club. I mean, 14 home runs in 35 games since becoming a Railroader player, Kevin. And the Railroaders, you know, kind of squeaked into the back end of the playoffs right there, grabbing that final spot. But Brett Boswell has been a key reason why they are in the playoffs right now.
For the better part of the week, you had to start wondering, did Lake Country nor Cleburne want to play in the playoffs? But finally, the Railroaders got the elusive win on Sunday night. And, you know, that matchup with Chicago, Cleburne's going to be going up against a really good shortstop with Josh Altman, who's had a fine year for the Dogs. But, you know, as we're just saying here, Boswell has been just as good in his short time with Cleburne.
Well, Kevin, time to talk playoffs now. So let's begin in the West. We'll begin out here. So the Kansas City Monarchs opt to go with the Sioux Falls Canaries, who technically finish in 2nd in the West Division, by tied with a record at 52-48 with Sioux City, but I believe had the better record overall against the Explorers. So 1-2. Here in the West, give us three keys or a couple of keys that you see for Sioux Falls and a couple of keys you give us for Kansas City.
With Kansas City, I think it's playing up to your potential and just embracing the playoff situation. You know, there's a lot of guys on this team with big league pedigree, and you just wonder, will they get keyed up to play in a playoff series in this league when, you know, generally the reputation of guys that have gone to Kansas City is that they go there to try to be picked up by organizations. So you hope that a guy like Yan Hernandez has been around there for a while. You hope that Hernandez can speak up and tell these guys that, hey, you know what, a championship in this league is just as important as any other championship you can pick up in baseball. On the Canary side, be key for the young guys to not be fazed by the situation they're in. You know, it's there's some young pitchers on the team. There's some young position players, and you hope the leadership core of the Canaries will guide them through a playoff series. And I think the other key, too, is the starting pitching. Ty Culbreth pitches game 1. Culbreth was, let's just say he was awful for a good part of the first half of the year, but he's been very good in the last month or so as the Canaries have had their ascent to a playoff position in the West Division. So you hope you get good starts out of Culbreth, and I believe Bostic would probably be your number 2 starter. Don't know what they're going to do as far as the number 3 guy. They've got a couple options on that front. Probably Mitchell Walters, maybe Seth Miller. So it'd be interesting to see where they go there, but they're they're going to have to get good pitching, and they're going to have a chance to beat the Monarchs.
You know, what's really interesting about that, Kevin, when did you think you would see a Sioux Falls team where you could go, they have five guys I could see who could start a game in this playoff? And I mean, credibly start him. You know, Neil Lang got hammered yesterday, but has pitched very well at times for this club, and so it's not like they don't have five dependable arms they could turn to. So it's pretty exciting to see what Sioux Falls might be able to put together for a starting three in this playoff series.
And it also gives them the luxury that if one of those guys isn't faring so well, they can have a quick hook knowing that they've got a guy like a Miller, like a Lang, that they could go to out in the pen, and they could give them length and hope that the bats can get them back into the game.
I think one storyline that'll be interesting for that, Kevin, is you got a very playoff-tested Kansas City team versus what many will see is a kind of a neophyte Sioux Falls teams in terms of playoffs. But as you mentioned, Ty Culbreth was in that 2020 championship series against Milwaukee. So with Jabari Henry, Mike Hart, some of those guys have some playoff experience. So while Kansas City clearly has more of it than Sioux Falls, it's not like Sioux Falls doesn't have some guys who understand this, what baseball looks like this time of year.
And let's not forget Jabari Henry, although he had a limited role in the playoffs. Jabari Henry was a big part of St. Paul's championship in 2019 when he joined the team late in the season to provide leadership too. So obviously Jabari's going to take on that role with this Canaries team also.
Well, Kevin, let's doom somebody. So who do you got in Kansas City Sioux Falls?
I think it's going to be Kansas City, but it's going to be tightly contested, and it's going to take three games.
Wow. I'm also seeing three games. I'll go Kansas City in 3-2. We'll go with that here. Let's stay in the West, Kevin. Sioux City Explorers will start in Fargo, but have the final two games of that series. Fargo finishes just one game behind Sioux City. They were the hottest team in the league over the last 10, 12 games here, and so give us your keys to this series for each of these teams.
With Fargo-Moorhead, I think it's going to be the bullpen. We've seen that they've got McGovern and Davis going very well, but can they bridge that gap between the sixth and the ninth innings when they can get to Rezaliz's? So I think the bullpen's a factor there, and I think another factor is going to be the offense, because there's been some guys that have had good seasons, but not seasons that they're accustomed to in this league. So the offense is going to have to emerge along with the bullpen pitching well if Fargo's going to win the series.
For Sioux City?
For Sioux City, it's going to be the starting pitching and hoping that the guys that they do indeed pick are the right guys. And I believe the offense is going to have to rise to the occasion. You know, it's going to, maybe it's a guy that hasn't had a great year. You know, maybe it's Chase Harris that gets a new lease on life when he sees his batting averages back to zero hits for zero at bats after a season that just did not go very good for him. So, you know, there's a lot of guys with a lot of veteran-like players in that Sioux City lineup, and they're going to need two or three of them to step up if they're going to produce enough offense to win the series.
You know, Kevin, before we began recording tonight's show, you and I were talking about the return of John Silviano to Fargo, and he had a nice three games before the playoffs began here. As you look at him, man, just phenomenal playoffs the last couple of years. How much of an impact do you see him having for this Red Hawks team?
I think the impact will be on and off the field. I mean, we could tell from the last 2 years that Silviano's an emotional leader on this Red Hawks ball club. And frankly, the power numbers have been down for this Red Hawks team for a lot of the season. When they got Dylan Thomas back, that helped. Scott Schreiber has done an excellent job in his half season. But boy, if you can get Silviano, he went 5 for 13 against Winnipeg, but did not have any home runs. But boy, if he can find his power stroke, and if you get Silviano going well, and Schreiber, Dylan Thomas, Leo Pena, they might be a handful for other teams to handle.
Now, on Sioux City side, Kevin, we were talking with Brad Allred about Chicago and how good their bullpen is. That Sioux City bullpen has been spectacular, and the return of Max Kuhns has been huge for them, probably the best overall reliever in the league the last couple seasons. Carlos Diaz got lit up today, but had been spectacular over the last month of prior to today's performance. And then you got Sean Rakosi looking good. You still got a Nate Gerken guy out there. This is a very deep bullpen for this Sioux City club. If you compare where Fargo's having some issues, is it Sioux City that winds up being able to use that bullpen to really take an advantage over the Redhawks, do you think?
I think so. I think you can shorten the game up where you hope to get five good innings out of your starter, and then you just take it from there. I mean, even four innings out of your starter, if you got that many guys on throwing well, your pen, you just take it from there. Everyone goes one inning, and you try to use that formula to win a ball game. And just think how good that pen would be right now if Kent Hassler was still in the picture.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Well, I will doom somebody first, Kevin, and I will, much to the chagrin of Steve Montgomery, who's throwing his hands up in the air right now as he's going, no, don't pick me, but I will go Explorers in two.
I am going to pick an upset and go Fargo-Moorhead in three.
Okay. All right. Our first difference here today. All right, Kevin, let's jump out there to the East right now. The Milwaukee Milkmen will begin the season against against the Kane County Cougars. This is the team that they chose. I think we heard from Tanner Hoops in that preview that Sioux Falls was looking as that as a big kind of a motivating thing against Kansas City that the Monarchs chose them. Do you see Kane County look at that in the same way and using that as motivation in this series?
I don't think so, because it just seems like in the East it was a pretty logical decision to pick Kane County, and it really wasn't based on because they think they can clobber Kane County, but it's just a matter that they don't want to do the long drive down to Cleburne. So you don't want to take on a team then with Chicago that tied with you for the division lead. So by process of elimination, you're playing Kane County.
Give me your keys here for Kane County and Milwaukee in this series, Kevin.
Kane County, just got to find the offense. It's shown at times that this team could put up some runs, but then there's been, especially in this last week, where the offense has gone silent for games at a time. And in a three-game series, if you can't afford to do that. So the offense is going to have to step up, and the starting pitching is going to have to find a way to shut down what can at times be a very good Milwaukee offense.
And your keys for Milwaukee?
Milwaukee is also been a bit of an enigma offensively, especially on the road. Right, Brian Torres is Brian Torres, but it seems like at times we saw a series in Sioux City where Milwaukee put up a bunch of runs and then got shut down 2 days in a row. So I think consistency in the offense is going to be key for Milwaukee, and I think starting pitching is going to be a question for Milwaukee. Gregory Vasquez is a popular pick for a potential pitcher of the year, but he's not a guy that's going to go give you seven innings. His outings as of late have been five and occasionally hitting six innings. So now you're taxing your bullpen a bit. So, you know, does a Christian Young step up? Kyle Mora got hit around again today. Is that a guy they're not going to be able to count on for the playoffs? So it'll be interesting to see what Milwaukee does as far as rotation for the playoffs.
You know, it's funny, Kevin, because 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, if you said, boy, I'd be worried about Milwaukee's starting staff, you'd be laughed at. But, man, this group has just kind of fallen back, except for Ryan Zimmerman. And so, you know, I guess you kind of look at it and think, who can really step up here and get back to where they were pitching a few weeks ago? Kyle Mora is really struggling right now. And a lot of innings for some guys, I think, that aren't used to that right now. And maybe the starting staff is just worn down.
Do you go with Ryan Zimmerman potentially for game one?
I think you do. To be honest, by the way, he's pitched of late.
It seems like, with my limited memory, it seems like he has pitched really well when he's pitched against Kane County since he's been with Milwaukee. So that might be a pretty ideal matchup for the Milkmen, and plus it would be their one home game, so there wouldn't be the pressure of starting game one on the road either.
What I also consider too, Kevin, is that they just went with him for one inning on Sunday, and that might be like his bullpen day kind of thing, which if you work that out, Wednesday would be his time that he'd be making a start. So, unless he's just, you know, Anthony Rome was just kind of looking to give a, you know, work his arm so it wasn't a 5 days until he got to go in, or 7 days until he got to go back to the mound or something like that. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him going game one. So,
well, in reading the tea leaves, I think he put him in for that one inning to try to break the strikeout record, because as soon as he took him out, he had a big hug for Zimmerman, like, you know, that was his purpose of being in there, was to get the strikeout record.
Well, we'll let you go first on this one. Kane County and Milwaukee, who's advancing?
I am going to go with an upset and take Kane County in three games.
Oh, wow. Kane County in three. Milwaukee fans would probably be happy if I go against them, because the first two rounds of the playoffs last year, I was against them in both those series, and they went on. But I am going to say Milwaukee in two to advance on there. So Milwaukee in two games. That leads us to the final playoff series, Kevin. The Chicago Dogs will take on the Cleburne Railroaders. Cleburne has, interestingly, talk about the reverse of last season. Chicago was the team that was rolling and then had a horrific August and barely snuck into holding on to that top spot and then got knocked out in the playoffs right off the bat. Cleburne was the team rolling at the end of last season, made it all the way to the Eastern Division Finals, were in pretty good position to even advance on. They're struggling heading into the playoffs right now, Kevin. Just weird how baseball comes together in the American Association sometimes.
It is, but, you know, starting Wednesday night, not to sound too cliche, but everybody's at 0-0 with a fresh start. So, you know, throw everything else out. It's a new season.
Well, let's talk about your keys in this series, Kevin.
I think for Chicago, it's going to be what can they get out of their starting pitching. Can the pitching get them deep enough where you can go to your bullpen that's been a very, very good shutdown bullpen? Can you get to them with a lead? And obviously you're going to need some help on the offense. And frankly, you know, if you look at this lineup, it's a little under-heralded, but, you know, there's bats in this lineup that can produce runs. So I think the offense is going to have to step up and just do enough to get to your bullpen with the lead late in the game.
For Cleburne,
For Cleburne, starting pitching. I think that, Kevin Hilton will be obviously one of the guys, and Jonathan Tripp, who's been very good for them since his acquisition from Chicago. They're going to need those guys, I believe, to get deep into ball games because, you know, we had that preview with Brad Allred. That gap right now between the starting pitching and Joe Corbett has been a little questionable. And for Cleburne also, the bats need to forget that August happened. Try to get back to where you were in July when you're one of the most feared lineups in the entire league.
And, you know, one guy who fits that scenario you're looking for and has a pedigree for that is Zach Naryer, who had an abysmal 2020, Kevin, then in playoff time was ridiculously good. So one of the guys that didn't have a great August, but heck, he knows what it's like to turn it on at the right time. So that should be a huge asset, I think, for Cleburne in the series. So, well, Kevin, I'll go first on this one. I am going to say Chicago in three.
Yep, likewise.
Okay. So we're both agreed on two of those series. Fantastic. Well, Kevin, before we jump around and talk a little bit about the other leagues going on out there, there's one last note about American Association Baseball I did want to mention for today. And, you know, for the teams that didn't make the playoffs, all of them were, you know, in contention in some degree or another until the last week. But all of them ended on a victory today. And I guess if you're, you know, kind of looking at this and going, well, there's hope for tomorrow kind of thing. I mean, I'm at least glad for those teams that they ended the season on a happy note.
As they like to say, ended on a good one.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk quickly about the other leagues going on out there because some of them will be getting underway with their playoffs as well. Starting with the Frontier League, we'll begin with talking about Players of the Week. So Aaron Alther, I guess is the way that I said, is Player of the Week, hitting .462 with 6 runs and 5 home runs in 10 games. For the Valley Cats is the final Player of the Week out there in the Frontier League. Their playoffs are now set. I'm going to go through these standings right here. Here we go. Gateway finishes in first and will take on the Washington Wild Thing. So good to see our buddy Tom Bate wind up getting his team into the playoffs again. Schaumburg will take on Evansville. And in the East, Quebec winds up with the top record. They wind up taking on Tri-City, I believe, with New Jersey battling Sussex County. And that will be our playoffs right there. In the Atlantic League, they're still continuing their season, but Player of the Month for them was Zach Mort of Gastonia. He was the Pitcher of the Month, excuse me, from Gastonia, and Angel Aguilar from Staten Island was their Player of the Month. Congratulations to those guys. Currently, second half standings, Lancaster in first by a game over York in the North, and Gastonia leading High Point by 4 games in the South. And that is it. A reminder that Kevin and I will come back on Wednesday night to give our thoughts on those contests as the first game ones of each of those series will get underway. So the show will be recorded sometime around 10 or something there by the time we get done with it and will be posted as it's completed. And I think that leads us out here today, Kevin. So anything else that I forgot to mention or we should talk about before we head out?
Well, I mean, I know it wasn't a conventional show tonight, but first of all, I do want to mention that for those that are interested in reading on 10thinningstretch.blogspot.com, I did throw together my postseason All-Star team. The League One sounds like it will be coming out within the next day or so. And if you're interested in the final power rankings, I have those listed too. I just listed the teams, didn't really get into too much detail. So, shout outs this week. I am going to give a shout out to King County Cougar broadcaster Connor Klingon, who on August 27th got engaged to his lovely young girlfriend Cassidy. It looks like that happened by Lake Michigan in Chicago. So congratulations to those two.
Absolutely. We like young love is always beautiful, Kevin. No doubt about it. Let's see, who is my shout out for this week? How about shout out to, I'm going to go shout out to the Sioux Falls Canaries. Technically, because of record against Sioux City, wound up finishing in second, and a team that I had dead last this year winds up finishing in second. And I mean, I think we were talking all-star break from the all-star break. Nobody expected this team to be anywhere near the playoffs. So great, great. I hope the city comes out there and really embraces what's going on here. And Kevin, I think it's important before we head out tonight to talk about playoffs can sometimes be a point where fans don't really show out because, you know, they weren't anticipating this occurring or whatever. But, man, this is the best time in American Association Baseball, and people got to get out for these games.
Yeah, it's a tough draw because you're not – you don't have a large window in which to sell tickets for the games, and you're not going to go out and sell 500 tickets to the Kiwanis or to any other larger corporation. So generally your numbers are going to be a bit down, but don't give up on it. Try to do something to get fans out. I was talking to somebody last night about playoff crowds, and I said, well, St. Paul, one year, college was back in session. They made all of their playoff games dollar beer nights. Just do something to get bodies in the door. Granted, they're not your hardcore fans, but they're people, and it creates an atmosphere. And frankly, if you go to a playoff game, a lot of nights when it's just the hardcores, those people are into the game, and 500 people can sound like 3,000. So if you get those 500 and then throw in about 1,500 people that are there for cheap beer and might raise a little bit of heck while they're there and create a positive atmosphere for the home team, well, then that's just a bonus. So hopefully the marketing team with the Canaries can get out there and create some excitement, and let's see how many people they can get into the birdcage on Wednesday night.
You know, Kevin, you're bringing up a very good point, because last year, and every player you and I talked to after the game was over mentioned this, the fact that the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks are trailing by a bunch, I think it was 5 runs in the 7th inning or something like that, but those fans never got out of that game in game 5. They were totally into it. They just knew their team was going to battle back and get back in the thing, and they did. Every player, I think, told us after the game was over, they were inspired by how the crowd stayed in the game, regardless of what was going on the field. And so, coming out there and keep your team going.
That was, what, 1,200 people and some 3,000?
Yeah, easily. Absolutely right. Well, once again, Kevin and I will be back on Wednesday night to talk about game 1s. So for Kevin Lucco, I'm Rob Panier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.